back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth. And boy, do we got a juicy episode for you this time. Joe Robinson from 98 Rock and Die Laughing Production joins us on this one, and he does not disappoint. We also have another special guest in Mr. Matthew Carroll of Rocky Gorge Rugby, former teammate for many, many years. I lost a lot of brain cells with this guy. He also has an extensive knowledge about tonight's film. But listen, guys, I know it's tough out there. There's a lot of shit going on. You don't know. The world is just filled with uncertainty and viruses, and we're stuck in our house. Do us a solid. Hop on the Apple Pods. Hop on the Stitcher. Hop on the iTunes. Hop on whatever platform you listen to us on. Drop us a 5-star rating. Give us a comment. Recommend us to a friend. It costs you absolutely nothing. Takes a little bit of your time. It means all the world to us. So without further ado, get strapped in. Turn the volume up to 11 and get ready for Airborne.
Hello, kiddies. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and bitches. Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and bitches.
Ready. I'm totally ready for this Matt Damon Bourne movie.
There we go. I knew he was ready.
Airborne. Got it. Are we rolling? Because I don't want to hear that joke again.
Yeah, that's it. Well, welcome to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth. And boy, do we have some fun guests on the show today. First and foremost, let's introduce the newcomer to the show, Mr. Matt Carroll, a.k.a. The Toad, joining us live via the internet.
What's up,
brother?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Welcome to your first foray into the Quality Time Podcast. How does it feel?
I'm glad that I was able to muscle my way into this. I have very strong feelings about this movie.
Yeah, so you saw me post about what movie we're doing tonight, and you immediately were like, I need to be on this. I have to be on this tomorrow. And we've had many discussions about this movie before.
It's probably the seminal movie of my childhood.
Now, just to give you guys a little background, I've known Matt Carroll, a.k.a. The Toad, since, I guess, the early 2000s from Salisbury University. We played rugby for, god damn, at least, I'd say 12 of my 16 years that I played. So, and you're still trucking out there.
Well, they canceled the season this year, but can't ruin me. Can't end my career that easy.
Hell yeah, brother. Hell yeah.
Who's better, you or Toad?
I will tell you, Toad is better right away. I will admit that. Yeah. I won't make him even say it.
He's like Rudy.
Yeah, man. You were an inspiration to me. You actually were the source of my first real rugby injury. You separated my shoulder.
Thanks, man. Anytime. We were on the same team. It was good.
I have like a tattoo here. It says,
did you stretch too far for the towel he was handing you? Tore your rotator cuff?
He threw the water at me with such velocity.
And that other voice that you hear is 98 Rock's own Die Laughing Productions patriarch, Joe Robinson. Joe, how are you doing?
What's up, guys? Okay, you just brought me my coffee. Hey, look, check this out. You guys, can you see that?
Ooh, the Rob and Joe show. You plug
Rob
in yourself.
Rob and Joe show mug. Yeah, you didn't even mention it, so I figured I'd give it a plug, which we give you guys a lot of plugs on our show. So
yeah, we
apparently I am talked about all the time so that strangers know me by the Rob and Joe show now.
Do you know that story that he's referencing right now?
I do. I am aware, but I don't think our listeners are privy to it. Jeremy, you were buying a guitar on Facebook the other day, and you got an interesting message from the guy you were purchasing it from?
Hold on. Before you go, he wasn't buying a guitar. He was buying a $65 guitar. Okay, continue. That's important. That's an important component that you I definitely want that mentioned. Go ahead.
Yeah, yes. The guy's like, are you the Jeremy Woodworth? Like, from the Robin Joe show? I'm like, yes, yes. So now I have to go all out for Joe and do an extra. Uh-oh, we lost Matt's.
Don't worry about it. Just keep going.
I'm very happy that I need to listen to more of the Robin Joe show now. So.
But more importantly, you screen capped what he sent you, and you immediately said, no, Joe is known because he does Joe Robinson's corrections on the Quality Time podcast.
He immediately distanced himself from the Robin Joe show. Let me see if I can actually have this here. Let me pull up this exact quote here. Here we go. By the way, are you the same Jeremy Woodworth I hear about on Robin Joe all the time? I should be able to. And then he talks about the $65 guitar. And then Jeremy goes, all the time, LOL, yes, we have Joe's corrections on Quality Time Brothers on Podbean and Spotify. As quickly as he could move away from my product, which is the reason he knows this. This guy even knows who Jeremy is. Yes, we have Joe on my show. Here's how it's consumed, Podbean and Spotify.
Also, I'm very happy that a new co-worker at work, a girl named Rachel, I played her my Dingleberry song, and I'm getting a little notoriety from the Robin Joe show. Have you ever heard? I was like, yeah, I heard of Robin Joe. I'm like, yes, I heard of Robin Joe.
There you go. Oh, so you're doing plugs off air to promote the Robin Joe show brand.
Shout out Rachel.
Yes.
Oh, it just shows that, yeah, Robin Joe, you guys get around and it's awesome.
Did you say that this is somebody you work with?
Yeah.
Then that story's a lie.
So Jerry, my next question.
Just because I only worked one day last week.
So Jeremy, do you or do you not have COVID-19 currently?
I have no idea. And if I have, I've spread it everywhere around work for at least more than 2 weeks.
I like how unapologetic about it you are.
Is there any chance that if he doesn't have COVID-19, that he doesn't have something else that's way, way worse?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he has the black lung. I'm sure if he does get COVID-19, he wouldn't be able to talk. He'd be getting a ventilator shoved down his throat like it's the fucking movie Signs.
Is it better to get it early when there's ventilators available? Wouldn't it be best to get it right now?
Yeah. Either that or to be an NBA player, apparently. Those are two.
Just like all my video games and everything I own, it's an older version, so it's like COVID-9 or COVID-8.
he's already survived 1 through 18.
Yeah, 19 is just knocking at his immune system's door, and he has to give it a fucking ticker tape like he's at the fucking butcher shop.
What are you, some kind of fucking hipster? You got it before it was cool.
I'm just old.
So. Well, that's awesome, man. Well, you know what? Since we actually have him on the show today, how about we do a couple of Joe Robinson's corrections?
Hey Joe Robinson.
Okay. All right, Joe. What do you got? What do you got for us?
Seriously, I have to read these corrections live? I don't have them.
Oh, okay, tight.
Hold on. I can go back through my did you ask me to do this?
Not really, but I figure they were just always on your mind. So
yeah, that's what I always. All right, I'm gonna go. I don't remember where we left it last, so here I go.
I'm gonna go with Sunday, right. March 22nd is probably a good one. Oh, the
okay,
jet.
So
the
here porn. I go. Got it.
Yep.
Yeah. So first of all, you guys couldn't remember what local comic did the porn. And that was Jen Tisdale.
Yeah, Jen Tisdale. Shout outs. She's a big listener of the show.
Yes.
Pretty sure she's never heard of me.
Also, Jeremy thinks that a phlebotomist is the name of the occupation that reads the bumps on people's heads. When, of course, that's a phrenologist. And a phlebotomist they draw blood. So he fucking swung and missed on that. Jeremy also called Mr. Know-It-All Mr. Nobody from the Bullwinkle show. Bullwinkle and Rock. Called him Mr. Right. All right, let me see what else. Oh, the Smithereen song that you guys – I'm going to go too far ahead, but I'm going to just roll with it since I'm on here live. The Smithereen song that you were trying to think of is Much Too Much.
Much Too Much. Okay.
From Nukem High. But I I've seen the Smithereens three times.
Okay.
And the last time I saw them, the lead singer, he weighed about 400 pounds, and of course now he's dead.
I've only seen him in bits and pieces.
He was pretty fat at Chiller.
Yeah. All right. And there's one last thing I wanna. So you made a Jack Ryan reference at the end. We're not gonna be able to play it at the end of the episode. I believe it was this last was Nukem High, right?
Nukem High Part One. Yeah, yeah.
He makes a Jack Ryan episode, Jeremy does, talking about him interrogating somebody and maybe, you know, crossing the line a little bit. You follow what I'm saying? Like waterboarding or, you know, pulling out fingernails or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Clearly you meant Jack Bauer, correct? Because Jack Ryan is a Boy Scout.
Yeah, he would never waterboard somebody. That sounds like a classic Jeremy foible right there.
Jeremy?
Maybe I was thinking of Risky Business.
All right, and that's it. That's all the corrections.
All right, solid Joe Robinson's corrections. Now, one thing we didn't really get your input on, Joe, we have now multiple intro tracks for Joe Robinson's corrections. Of course, the original one, which is the Hey Joe track, we've used for years. But recently, Jeremy has made two other tracks, the Yoko Ono version one, and then I think another one that's a little bit... What was
hey
the other?
Jude. Hey
yeah,
Jude.
Yeah, Hey Jude to Hey Joe. But do you have a favorite between the three?
Yeah, I mean, I like the OG. I know sometimes it feels good to mix things up, but the Hey Joe is my favorite of all of them. I wish there was a little more echo on it, but other than that.
Stop. Don't you fucking encourage him, Joe. Don't you do that to me.
Use a little bit more echo.
So, okay, good. Live Joe Robinson's corrections. You guys got it here first. So,
hey, are you guys watching Curb Your Enthusiasm? Are you watching that?
No, I'm watching the low budget version called Dave, which is the Little Dicky show currently. But I'll probably get back into Curb and catch up.
Well, he opens up a spite store. There's a guy with the coffee shop. He gets into an argument with him, so he opens up a coffee shop right next to him. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel when I ask Jeremy to take the echo off of these songs.
Yes, you get it. You get it double.
He just turns it up to where you can't make out a single syllable.
Now you know you could never take away the echo from the dark side.
Just a little less. That's all. That's all I'm at.
Just a smidge. Just a smidge. All right. Is this audio coming through to you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So tonight we're going over the 1993 classic, Airborne, the movie that is basically the Rocky of rollerblading films. Am I wrong in that?
I would say it's Roadhouse. Of rollerblading film.
Roadhouse?
Because Rocky's actually good. You know what I mean? But Roadhouse, I love. Does that make sense? But I know it's not good.
That is true. I mean, this movie isn't good, but it holds a special place in my fucking heart. I've
watched it right now. I just watched it yesterday and watched it again.
Yes, immediately. It definitely came out in the formative years where there's this time in the 90s where... It's a very short window where rollerblading was fucking cool. And I think it was just like Y2K hit, and then it was fucking rollerblades were the gayest thing you could have on your feet immediately.
So I've played sports my entire life. I would say I was incredibly average to below average. Mm-hmm. For the people that played sports, I was bad. Okay. I was better than the people that didn't play sports. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But I've actually thrown on a pair of rollerblades, mm-hmm. and I've never in my entire life looked more uncoordinated than I did when I had a pair of rollerblades on.
It's funny that you said that because I had rollerblades in the 90s, and I could not skateboard to save my life. But because I could kind of decently ice skate, when I got rollerblades, they made sense on my feet, like how to balance. And so there's a roller rink that's in my neighborhood, okay? Before the apocalypse happened, I've been to like four children's birthday parties with my daughter. So I was there the second time I went. I looked on the rack, and I saw that they had five pairs of rollerblades up there, right? And I was like, holy shit. I went and rented those.
So they have an 8.5 wide, your size?
Yes.
8.5 double wide?
They did. Hey, you want to know, the whole time I was there, there were still 4 more pairs you could rent. So
you're the only one out there with rollerblades?
I was the only one with rollerblades, but I could actually do it because I can't do 4 skates at all. I look fucking horrible, but I could still rollerblade, man. I still got it.
Now, I used to roller skate, you know, probably till I was too old. I think I was actually a freshman in high school the last time I went to roller skate.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only female interaction that I had, right, before mm-hmm. I had pubes. That was my whole indoctrination to women.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if you guys remember this, but there used to be something called an all-girl skate and an all-guys skate. And what would happen is when the girls would skate, or the guys would skate, the opposite sex, this is back when there was only 2 genders, the opposite sex would put their hand out so you could slap their hand as you went by.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, as a middle schooler, by the way, I was no God's gift, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I looked like. I weighed 30 pounds, right? Giant forehead, buggy eyes or whatever. I would put my hand out, and every time I saw a girl that I felt was beneath me, I would pull my hand back. I would only let the women that I felt were worthy slap my fucking middle school sweaty palm.
So you saw somebody that was like, oh, you know, who weighed more than you. You were like, sorry, fatty. See you at the fucking Space Invaders later.
So these were at the all Muslim skate land.
Yes. What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, they all came by in burkas.
Toad, what would you say the impact of Airborne had on your life?
I started rollerblading immediately, and I this is the cause of several scars on my face and all throughout my body.
You watch this movie, you're like, I gotta get some fucking blades. I gotta fucking shred.
Yeah, I gotta do it. Like, I'll go to the atrium. I'll go to like the arboretum, and I'll be cool, and you know, chicks will like me. And that didn't happen.
All right. Well, let's start breaking down the fun of Airborne here. Now, the movie starts off with, you get to hear the level of douchiness that our lead Mitchell Goosen he speaks as if he's a guru at the age of 16 almost all the time. Okay, so he's had a life experiences that he's always ready to give sweet stoner knowledge out.
He's the Patrick Swayze of
Mother Nature has cast her spell.
Just opening.
Waves to remember. Calling us home.
Waves to remember, calling us home, man. And immediately starts with rollerblading in the first minute of this movie. In fact, the first 4 minutes is nothing but rollerblading and surfing B-roll.
And you know that when he, I'm going to jump ahead, we can go back, but eventually he makes it to Ohio. We'll get there. But he forgets his rollerblades.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, it was the one thing that he's like, well, this is, I never should have forgotten these. Oh, the thing, it's the only thing I do. The only other thing he does is surfs, and he's in fucking Ohio. So,
but he brought his fucking surfboard there.
Yeah.
That he didn't forget.
They're all fucked up, yeah.
It would be like Sylvester Stallone in Roadhouse just forgetting, in Over the Top, just forgetting his arms. You know what I'm saying? Right? Like, it doesn't.
Yes. He's the best in the world at it, but he forgot to bring them. Got it.
You know, with the surfboard, he could still find a good pool and like plenty of fat guys to jump into the other end of the pool.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
He's always there. So the Goose, after a long day of surfing and shredding waves and rollerblading back and forth, goes to his parents' house, where his parents break him some terrible news.
The National Zoological Institute has asked us to study the Australian wombat.
Australia? What are you talking about? That's great news. I mean, we've never been to Australia before. I mean, I'm talking about waves of seismic proportions, summers that never quit, and golden tan sheilas. This is incredible. So when do we leave?
We would love for you to go with us, Mitchell.
But this is for 6 months.
6 months?
You can't be out of school for that long.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
There'll be other times, Mitchell, we promise, but not during the school year.
Well, if I'm not going to Australia.
Well, that's just it, Mitchell. You see, we've got a surprise for you. Tell them what it is, Kate.
You get to go stay with your Uncle Louie and Aunt Irene in Cincinnati.
They have a boy just your age, Cousin Wiley.
They've been dying to see you for so long.
And it's only for 6 months. I think it'll be good for you, son. An education, a chance to broaden your horizons, see how other people live.
It'll be fun, honey. Trust us.
Yeah.
You'll see.
Look at it as an adventure.
Man, nothing like the adventure of going to Ohio. Quite possibly the worst state in the union to be.
No, they did a good job. West Virginia is the worst state. Let's be serious. But still, you're right. There's nothing to do there. But one thing that I never knew until Airborne is that there are no schools in Australia. I didn't know that.
They speak a different language there. How is he going to adapt so fast?
You got to learn from the bush.
Can I just say that Ohio is so bad, his dad pussied out on telling him like that he was going there and had to like force it onto his mom.
Yes. He's like, it's the worst news. Grandma's dead, it's worse.
Does everybody think the same thing when they hear Cincinnati and that's Howard Hessman?
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what I think.
WKRP.
No, I got it. WKRP in Cincinnati.
Hell yeah.
So, do you guys even know that show? What did that reference?
I'm aware of it. You want to know? I'm only aware of the one episode where it's the helicopter one, I guess, where he's up in the air.
Les Nessman drops the turkeys.
Yes.
I'll give you one connection real quick that you'll be familiar with. The episode of Different Strokes where Arnold and his friend get their penises touched by the bike guy.
Yeah, the bicycle man. Famous episodes of Quality Time we've already done,
That's the program director or the station manager on WKRP.
Oh, what a monster.
Actor, whatever that guy's name is. Yes. I'm just talking about his range. Oh, he can play a pedophile. He can play a important executive.
And station manager.
Hi, my name is Ed McClurg, and I am I'm an actor. I play pedophiles and executives, so please hire me.
Wait, you played a pedophile. Oh, you didn't play a station director, did you?
He's off to Cincinnati where he gets to meet his aunt and uncle. His aunt is played by Edie McClurg, who's famous from the Ferris Bueller films and really
Burton films in general.
Yes.
And she's the wisecracking secretary Grace, who we actually have that as a character in one of our Die Laughing production shows back to the 80s.
And she's supposed to serve in this as our comic relief throughout the thing, because she's just an out-of-touch older lady who doesn't get what these kids and their rollerblades are all about.
Can't be. You're just too grown up. Give me a big hug. Yes.
Oh. Welcome to Cincinnati, young fella. Yes. Thanks for having me here.
Oh, isn't he adorable? Ooh. Look at these eyes. They're just like his mother's. And this hair. My goodness, have you ever seen such hair, Father?
Fine piece of hair it is, young fella. Yes.
So he gets to meet his cousin Wiley, who immediately is trying too hard to be cool throughout this entire movie, right? He's the perfect juxtaposition character of Mitchell, he's just so cool he doesn't try, to this guy who just tries constantly too hard to be cool.
It is interesting. Obviously, he's supposed to be comic relief, and, you know, Mitchell is the hero or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you name, other than the girl, the love interest that we're eventually going to learn about, anybody that's likable at all in this movie? Don't you hate every single character?
I mean, I guess in retrospect, I really do love Augie, who was Jack Black.
Even in this part.
So
I'm a huge fan of Snake.
Yeah, and I don't hate Snake either, man. Snake is he's pretty magical, but almost everybody else is pretty. No, they're all freaking fucking horrible.
I like the three old guys sitting on the porch.
Oh man, you're going way ahead.
So the father points to the surfboard, saying, not a lot of places you can use that there. So he brought his surfboard to Cincinnati, which is a landlocked state.
On the plane.
Not
his skates.
Not his skates. He's like, nope, can't leave anywhere without my board.
Then he says, I never go anywhere without my stick, and then throughout the movie never has it again, unless he's in the room where he keeps it. That's the only place he's ever with.
He does a pretend scene where he's like surfing on the bed, and he even falls off the wave in his imagination.
Yeah,
like
how he waxes it prior. Yeah.
How good are you when you even in your imagination you can't surf?
Hey, doesn't his uncle remind you? Has everybody seen Tiger King? Everybody's seen that already?
Oh yes, one.
I haven't seen it yet. Just started it last night though.
Okay, well, Carol Baskin's husband, he's the exact same character as the uncle in this movie.
100%. No, I could see that. Yeah, I always look at Carol Baskin's husband as if wet bread were a person, right?
Yeah, like just a complete fucking beta.
Yes, there's nothing. That guy gets dominated in every conversation that he has, and I think it's because he might end up missing. So,
I wanted to give a shout out to the only reference to a hit song that Roger Waters ever put out in a movie, and it's What God Wants When He Comes to the Airport.
Oh, okay. I didn't pick that up, but that's a Roger Waters ridge. Who knew?
And it's never probably been ever used in another movie ever or anything else.
So. Oh.
There's actually a Steve Miller song in this movie as well.
Oh, really?
Coming up a little bit later. So yeah, they got some Pink Floyd in there, or at least some derivatives, some Steve Miller, and then eventually you're also going to hear a song by let me see if I can see this here, Jeremy Jordan, My Love Is Good Enough. I hope we get to hear that a little bit later.
If we're talking about music, can we just like briefly pause on the fact that like there's some great B-roll guitar riffs every time he either skates or like surfs? Like it's just like three times in this movie.
It almost sounds like Steve Vai.
Yeah, very little Steve Vai. That's actually one of his credits before he really blew up. So they head back to the house. This house is just wallpapered a different color in every single room that you walk into. They head down to the basement where he's going to be staying with Wiley, and Wiley tries to impress him with his sweet room of he has sexy girl posters that are hidden under the bed. There's lights down there. I mean, I will admit, I thought the definition of cool was having a basement room that had fucking Christmas lights up in the middle of like summertime. I mean, that was a big fucking deal back then to me.
Good, Jeremy.
What about the Megadeth poster?
There was a Megadeth poster. He also wears a Slayer shirt later in the
movie.
Yeah,
Danzig, Kiss, Motley Crue. Now, Seth, he didn't dress like a headbanger, but clearly he was.
Yeah. Seth.
I also liked when he showed the picture of that chick in the bikini to Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, what do you think of this? Do you like hot chicks in bikinis? He's like, oh yeah, I like those. That's cool, man. Thanks.
Well, Mitchell responds. He's like, I bet your mom would like her.
Right? Well, here's a little audio of Seth Green trying to be cool. That's the guy who plays Wiley here. Here's him trying to impress Mitchell.
Don't let the old lady snow you, man. I mean, this guy's been around the block more than a few times. If you know what I mean? You catch my drift, right? You picking up what I'm putting down? I'm with you all the way, bro. Cool.
He's been around the block, okay? So the next day is their first day of school, and he's getting the typical new guy treatment in a movie, just getting bumped into by people. He's wondering how people just walking at a regular speed in a school is just like, whoa, what do you mean? If I stand in the middle of the hallway, people are just going to run me over? This is nuts.
Yes, I've never been in a school hallway before. Is this what it's like when people move from class to class?
Yeah, and then he runs into Snake, who is the mean Vato, who a bit of a loner, seems like the school bully, and Wiley pulls Mitchell aside to warn him about Snake.
You roll guitar.
What the hell is wrong with you? There was Snake, man, voted most likely to eat his young. I can't believe we're still alive. You better watch your step if you know what's good for you, because he might not be so nice next time, okay? Yeah, okay, cool.
I like he might not be so nice. What has Snake done at the school that he has this reputation currently?
Yeah, he's also like 5'3".
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, seriously? That's the badass? I guess he has a gun.
Well, if there's something I wanted, it was like either a Snake prequel or a Snake spinoff.
Yes.
Because he's like, not to get too far ahead, but he's got some like weird stuff about him that doesn't fit in with anybody else in the movie. Like, that scene, he's definitely got a very racially integrated gang working with him. Like, and not what you would expect for like a Vato who collects knives and tattoos guys' foreheads. Like,
yeah, it's almost like he's trying to form his own Power Rangers group. You understand? He's like, well, I'm the Mexican guy, clearly, so I need to find an Asian and we're set. So
he's got like a Neo Geo, but it can still jump with like the hydraulics.
What the fuck is he talking about? Oh god,
my
damn it.
God.
I love it.
I don't even know what that is.
So he goes over, and after he runs into Snake, they head to their first class, where Wiley just thinks it's a good idea to introduce his cousin the first in front of everybody, right? He's like, this is my cousin Mitch. Like this. Not cool at all, right? So he stands before the class to introduce himself.
How's it going, guys?
And then he throws up a peace symbol and immediately gets shit on.
Can I say this about that? They're right.
Yeah.
Every time he opens his mouth, he's fucking more and more ridiculous. Can you imagine if we were sitting there listening to him give that speech that we're about to hear?
Yes.
Yes, of course. Of course you'd act that way.
I'm the class nerd, but even I want to beat him up.
This is our protagonist.
So,
by the way, also one more thing we're going to get to, but Jack, who ends up being, I guess, the foil or one of the foils that's mm-hmm. sitting in the front row, is clearly 30. He's 30 years old.
Yeah.
I was going to say that too.
Don't they sit in the back of the class? Don't they not sit in the very front seat by the teacher?
Well, Jack was clearly taking notes like during the speeches too. Like, I don't know what he was writing down, but like he's got his pen out, he's taking notes. He's very studious.
Which, the one thing don't see is that he at the top of his list it says things to bully people about, and he's just writing down what they're saying constantly.
It's like us preparing for a Quiplash game.
Yes,
there's all the things we know that are horrible about our friends.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Yeah, if you so I invited Toad actually to play last night, but Toad, the way we play Quiplash is if we know something about you, that's immediately the thing that we bring up constantly, and it's just constant personal attacks throughout the entire game. It ends up being pretty fun, though.
The best name of Quiplash is?
What's that?
When one of the player kills themselves after the game.
we might have gotten close. I got a couple side texts before, by the way, but that's another story.
So, we'll have to probably stop this feed in like 5 minutes before it boots us, and I'll send you back out a new code to rejoin. But after he throws up the peace sign, one of the girls in class moves her jacket so that Mitchell can sit down. She then knocks over a book so that he can pick it up, which is weird because I've never seen a girl be like, oh, I need to drop this. So he comes and picks it up. It's very, very ahead of its time in gender roles. Okay. So but he finds out very quickly that Jack, the guy who the bully at the front of the room, that's his girlfriend who's flirting with Mitchell, and he has a daytime fantasy about throwing him out of a window right there, which is
extreme. This bitch, what the fuck's her problem? She has a boyfriend. What is she just? By the way, I know girls like that who just had their boyfriend just beat the fuck out of some random guy.
Yeah,
is that what she's doing?
Well, they both have fantasies about him. Like she's got a fantasy of him without his shirt on. He's got a fantasy of like beating him up and throwing him out the window. This is definitely some kind of like swingers kind of thing that they got going on. And like, hey, I'm not here to judge that.
Yeah, that's some fucking. They're pulling some. Maybe they're cucks. Who knows? You know, maybe Jack is low key a cuck, and this is just he fantasizes about killing, but really he just wants to watch Mitch fucking use his fucking stick on her. So right after that, we get to hear all of our players because this is speech class, the most important class of all high school criteria. By the way, I've never heard of speech class before. I've never even seen.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
I was never able to take that. So we get to hear. From Snake, Augie, Wiley, and then finally Mitchell and Jack.
Next.
What about Snake?
I don't like speech. I never even signed up for it. And I ain't got no hobbies, lest you call collecting knives and putting tattoos across the foreheads of guys I don't like hobbies. And I have a 1.1 GPA.
So that was our Snake, your hero, Matt. Is that what really turned you on to Snake there?
I appreciate his candor and his honesty right in front of the class. Like, the other girl came by and said she had a 3.8 GPA and she's going to be a successful lawyer. And he's like, I don't give a fuck. I have a 1.1 GPA and this is what I do. But he goes on to surprise us in many areas after this.
All right. Next is one of my favorite actors and comedians of all time, Jack Black, playing Augie.
Augusto Rafael de la Parra. Everyone just calls me Augie, though. I really like to sleep, and I like Nintendo.
So that's all we get out of Jack Black. Do you remember, Jeremy probably knows the answer to this, but I'll throw it out to Joe Robinson. Joe,
sure.
Do you know what other 90s, early 90s movie that Jack Black was briefly appeared in?
I know it was in a Pitfall commercial for the Atari game Pitfall. I don't know the movie.
Well, if you're ever familiar with the great works of one Pauly Shore, in the movie Biodome, Tenacious D is actually featured as the band that's playing outside the Biodome.
Oh, hell yeah. Now, by the way, I looked it up. Jack Black, of all the people, because, you know, everybody in here is way out of high school age, mm-hmm. except for Mitchell. He's 17. But Jack Black is the oldest. He's 24.
Nice. Oh, my gosh.
And Jack Black and I are the exact same age, so I would have been 24 when this movie came out.
Sweet. All right, let's hear some of our other players.
What about Never Ending Story Part 3?
The Wily Man. Wily Messner. You know me, we've talked, we've met, we've spoken, passed each other in the halls. You used to beat me up, but I forgive you. Anyway, but if you really want to know who Wily Messner is, who I really am, I'm a hockey man. I live to play hockey. I play hockey to live.
Oh, Scotty, no.
That's all I do. I mean, hockey is my life. I've got on hockey underwear right now. I have a hockey toothbrush. My dad drives a Zamboni. He gave me a puck.
So, wait a minute. What a horrible lie that he just perpetuated, right? He talks about how much of a hockey player he is, but he's in a small school in Cincinnati. The people would know if he played hockey already, right?
And everyone in the class plays hockey. Every single person. Hey, you know what?
That
thing
class
about,
is the hockey team.
Yes.
Like, it's very informal.
Yes, even the Hanson brothers or whoever those are, the Mexican Hanson brothers who also are on the team. I think they're in that class too. But I will say this about the Seth Green character. He's consistent. Every scene he's in, I'm uncomfortable. Every time he talks, every time I see him, I wish he wasn't even in this fucking movie. Every
that
time.
Hair, man. Kills me.
Every time he speaks, that we're coming up. I won't get too far ahead. We're coming up on the fashion show.
Oh yeah.
Every time I see him, it's completely uncomfortable.
I agree. So after that, we finally get to hear from Mitchell Goosen himself as he gets to speak before the class.
Service. I'm not from around here. Hey. What to tell? Well, I don't have any stories. Don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Don't care. Just as long as I live near the beach and don't have to wear a tie. Then I'll be styling.
Styling? What? What? Styling?
Let me tell you what styling is. The perfect session. A-frame wave, ground swell. Spitting out salt water in your face. Doing a little lip action move. A 360 without a bounce. I call it a liquid Drano. Wannabe Bullwinkle. I tell you no lie, my friends. It's a consciousness razor.
Oh, man, I'm going to throw up.
What's consciousness?
He gets tortured coming up, and he because of that speech, he deserves everything he gets. He deserves.
Yes, he's
fully deserving of whatever treatment he gets. He's a complete douche.
Gosh.
Well, let's give some background here. Like, we're gonna find out that their big rivals are the preps. Like, that talk is definition of like privileged rich kid prep.
Yeah, 100%. He's not clicking with the hard streets of Cincinnati right now. Okay,
the working class environment.
Who would what he said be cool with that? Everybody'd be like, oh, that guy's making a lot of sense. I also like how the teacher just lets the class just torture one another. Yeah. Right? Augie gets up and stands next to him and shits on him. The teacher's like, okay, everybody get their time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That was a much better speech than the first time, Augie. You're showing a lot of progress here. I'm proud of you.
Than that, like, I don't know. Give me some.
Didn't your dad just like once stab your mom?
Oh, Jeremy, he always coming with the relevant comments.
Captain Crunchberries, a couple bean burritos, maybe an Otter Pop or two, and I'm a pretty happy camper.
Get up there. I have a few things to say. Could I add something, please? I think that the pretty boy Maharishi over here has been mixing a little bit of Drano with his fruit punch. Does anyone here believe this L.A. laid-back horse poo? This guy is peddling. I don't buy it. You big fruity two-shoe.
So we finally then get to hear from Jack.
Surfer. All right, Jack, you can be next.
Been waiting my whole fucking class for this shit.
I got all these notes.
You don't really think surfing is a sport, do you? Mm-mm.
By the way, he thinks surfing's not a sport, but by the end of this movie, downhill rollerblading is probably the most competitive sport he's ever heard of. All right,
just keep that. It's clearly a sport. All right, it's not like poker. It's a fucking sport.
Yes,
right?
This isn't darts, right?
It requires a lot of athleticism to be able to fucking ride a giant wave, right?
Yeah, I agree. Okay. I agree.
Badminton, man, it's checkers. It's getting a suntan. You want to try a real sport? Why don't you try hockey? As a matter of fact, man, we got a game today against the Preps.
That's right, against the Preps.
That's right. We've never beaten the Preps.
Ever.
And I'm not graduating in May a loser. We're nobody's doormat. We're going to do it today. We're going to kick the Preps' butt.
Fuck yeah. Do it for Rosenblatt. We didn't get to mention Rosenblatt, but he has a fully like broken nose face guard on and just is basically their team dullard. I don't think he actually has any speaking lines in the entire film except just having an open mouth and
never really find out what happened to him. But clearly he sustained this injury playing the badass Prep.
Yeah, that sounds like the Preps, they would never just leave a Rosenblatt unturned. So
he went out of bounds once and his head got run over by a car.
So after class, Jack and Augie confront Mitchell.
So what about you, Maharishi? You coming to the game?
Chill, bro. Let it go, man.
Did he just call you a piece of underwear?
Hey, Mitchell.
Did he just call you a piece of underwear? Man. So Jack's girlfriend starts flirting with Mitchell again in the hallway, and Jack and Augie come over to confront him.
To complete their swinger fantasy.
Yeah.
Be careful. That's Jack's girlfriend.
We were just showing Mitchell here some hospitality.
Bye.
Hi. Guess what, Moondoggy? Cute little earring. I'm going to do everybody a big favor, save a little time, and just kick your little butt right now and teach you that you don't mess around with other people's property.
We were just chatting, chill, bro.
That's it. He said he did it again. I'm going
to
kill him.
Oh, shit. So, but just as they're about to fight, suddenly the twin hockey players come up from the class with some breaking news. Two of their players are down for today's game. Now, Snake steps up, and he says, I'll play to fill in. And they all kind of look at Snake and are like, yeah, Snake's pretty badass. Why didn't we ever think of asking him to join the team before right this moment? Which is, I already find odd, right? You pull your best players. Why wouldn't you ask? Why would today be the day you're like, we got to finally ask Snake?
But, and we find out Snake is awesome.
Yes.
He scores goals. He's the fastest skater in Cincinnati.
Yes.
Like, where has he been hiding this?
He's everything.
Collecting knives and carving tattoos into people's foreheads up now.
And you know what? Based on the information that we have, I bet he's the fucking best at that, too.
Yeah.
He excels at everything he does.
I think it's funny that Snake is actually everything Wily claims to be, right? Like, And then they immediately turn their eyes to Wily, and then they tell him he's playing today. Hockey's your life, isn't it? Blah, blah, blah. They corner him against the thing, and the next thing you know, we're seeing Wily getting dominated on the ice. So Snake, though, on the other hand, like we mentioned, is a fucking all-star player. He like becomes their Alex Ovechkin the second he steps on the fucking ice, just weaving through people, scoring goals. He's amazing, right? Now, Jack.
Hey, don't you need to practice in order to get that good?
Don't even get me started on like how informal everything is. I'm not sure if this is sanctioned. They're playing to three. That's the game.
It's like that game that you used to play in the arcade with the big bubble over it. You know,
yeah. Like this is insane here. Like, there are obviously no rules. There are no refs. Like, they've never beaten the preps. Who even are the preps? Like, this is an 80s movie with a 90s aesthetic on it, and they're just making it up as they go along, and they play a second game later.
Yeah, yes. but here's the thing. Snake is, even to learn how to skate that well, wouldn't you have seen, it's not like there's 15 ice rinks in this fucking, in Cincinnati,
well,
right?
Well, you guys, didn't I you, mean, they're counting
didn't
on-
Didn't know he was good?
Well, they're counting on us to understand the knowledge of how many great South American hockey players exist, right? Like, you have to come in with that knowledge. So Mitchell yells at Wiley from the stand saying, "Come on, dude, what are you doing?
Come on, Wiley. You hockey man, you hockey warrior, hockey Nintendo."
Oh man, hockey Nintendo. How many times did you play hockey Nintendo growing up?
Dude, what are you talking about? I played Blades of Steel fucking 24/7. That's one of the great games of all time.
Well, that's the name of a game, not hockey Nintendo, right?
You also did the same thing that everybody else did in Blades of Steel, which was just trying to get into a fight, because that was the best part of that game.
No, let me tell you something. Here's the secret. If you ever get an opportunity to play that game again, which is one of the OGs, people don't realize the goalie would follow this little area, and that's where the puck was going to be shot, mm-hmm. right? This little indicator let you know. So if you were the goalie, you could follow that little mark. However, people didn't know this. You could actually just pass directly into the goal. So instead of shooting, you passed, it would just go straight in. It was a way to dominate. I'm a little annoyed I gave that secret away, but I figured at this point, you know, not many people are playing it.
I mean, that's...
And also, not many people are listening.
Yeah. Spoiler alert for a 30-year-old game.
Yeah. It's kind of like the same trick with Tecmo Bowl, where you just get Bo Jackson, and then you run back 20 yards, and then get everybody in a straight line, and then just run around the corner and dominate everyone. So, now, Jack and Blaine get into it. Blaine is basically the Jack for their team. He's a real doucher. He's somehow more douchier than Jack. Looks a little bit younger. Looks like a swole version of Zach Morris, okay? And they're talking shit, jaw-jacking. In the stands, Mitch sees his girl, meets his new girl, Nikki, who will be the love interest shortly after this. Tells her he's not really interested in these girls, but they're going to get him killed because they're boyfriend and girlfriend with Jack over there, only she don't act like she's his girlfriend. He tells Nikki a little story about guys like Jack, and this is really just to hammer home the douchiness that is Mitchell Goosen in this film. Here's Mitch's take on Jack.
"I once knew this real badass who was always fighting over waves. Anyone ever came near a wave he was on, he'd go berserk, Looney Tunes, he'd fight him right there. Didn't matter how big the guy was, he didn't care. Real head case. Anyway, one day he comes across this kid on a boogie board who has the nerve to be on his way. So he says to himself, 'Hey, I'm going to teach this kid a lesson. Scare him.' So he surfs on over to him, only he gets too close. And the skags on the board slice into the kid's head. There's blood everywhere. Kid nearly drowned.
Is he all right?"
"Yeah. Only he's got this scar on the side of his head."
"Well, what happened to the surfer?"
"He's living in Cincinnati."
So,
what a coincidence.
So he you think he's telling the story about the kid on the boogie board, right? That he's like, "Yeah, I'm the kid on the boogie board." No, he's the asshole on the surfboard that just cut up a kid on a fucking boogie board.
Did he just time for that? Is that how he changed?
Yeah. The story is, "Hey, I actually am a badass."
Yes.
Just so I can make sure you know that. Okay. "By the way, this movie has another hour in it. I will fight no one. I will throw no punches."
Yes.
We'll pant somebody, and that'll be the baddest ass thing that I do.
So shortly after that, we see Wiley get knocked out of the game. So with no other choices and options left, they stick the surfer Mitchell Goose in into the game, throw his pads on him. It's noteworthy to point out that the preps at least have like a uniform that looks like a JV squad's like fucking uniform. They're not dressed
white,
like,
right?
Yeah, they just have white practice jerseys. It's a full motley crew for the other team. This can't be a sanctioned school sport in any way, shape, or form.
Didn't Mitchell, when he originally went out, wasn't he still wearing his backpack? I'm almost positive.
He was wearing his backpack.
He was definitely wearing his sweatshirt, like, yeah, underneath the pads.
Can we also say what a fucking bitch Nikki is? Couldn't she have said, oh, that guy Jack, that's my brother.
Yeah.
That girl that's fucking with you is his girlfriend. Hey, Jack, my brother, just so you'll know, Mitchell isn't doing anything. Your fucking whore girlfriend is trying to fuck him. I'm watching it happen.
He's not trying to fuck you. He's not trying to fuck your girlfriend. He's trying to fuck your sister. So, like, let's be real. I just care about, like, letting you know that.
So, the first time he gets to touch the puck, he shoots and scores on his own team. It's a bad day for Mitch, as that is the third goal, and the preps have won yet another year, breaking Jack's promise of being a fucking loser to the preps once again in his senior year.
Your team has no depth.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem. Like, they have no depth.
Yes, every time somebody goes down, Seth Green has to play.
Yes.
They only play once a year? Can't they just play every weekend?
Yes.
It's not like it's a league or anything, although they did have a scoreboard, so yeah. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
This game is to three. They have another unsanctioned game in a parking lot somewhere later that just appears.
That game's to four.
I like it. Well, basically, it's the Battle of Ohio, right? Like, the Browns and the Bengals, they play twice a year. So it's worth noting that this is the prep. This is the Battle for Ohio, pretty much, right here.
They also only play to three, and they say that, but there's also a clock.
Yeah.
Good point.
I'm glad. Listen, I had questions about bringing you on this episode, and I knew it was a good call. So
that comment alone, yeah. Jeremy, you can go and sit this one out.
Everything else was a mistake.
So now Jack tackles him as soon as the game's over, and basically knocks him out. And not only everybody on his own team comes over and shits on him. Snake at one point actually like waves a knife in front of his face, but also the other team comes by. They don't thank him. They're also shitting him like, what a fucking loser, even though you won the game.
Well, they're right again. Everybody's right. It's all justifiable. They've never beaten this team. They play once a year. It's to three. There's a clock. And this fucking dick, who already's been acting like a douche, and as far as Jack knows, is trying to fuck his girlfriend, just scored the goal for the other team.
Yeah.
I mean, how are they not justified? They're completely justified.
So he wakes up hours later, okay? Hours later, Wiley finally goes over to the ice after he dresses, right? A man is just unconscious on the ice, and Wiley, he's like, oh, this is my blood, my friend. I'm going to go hit the showers real quick. I'll be back, all right? So he comes back and wakes him up. He's like, yeah, I think it's time to go.
Hey, real quick, I want to make sure that we don't. There's a theme that's coming up. Before, when he was telling Nikki a story about being a badass and mm-hmm. cutting some child's head open that almost drowned, he says, it's a direct quote, I don't think there's anything worth fighting for, which has never been said by the hero. He didn't realize until later on that there was something worth fighting for. Everything was nothing to him up until you see what happens a little bit later.
Yeah, what, has he never listened to one REO Speedwagon song? This uncultured swine?
Lives the easiest life in the world. He's literally living by the beach. He can go surfing all day. His parents study wombats. He's worked for nothing in his life. Like...
Well, he should have said, I don't think there's anything worth fighting for yet. I mean, nothing's happened.
Yeah.
My parents fight for those wombats.
Oh, man. They must be having a real tough time in Australia now, studying those wombats.
This piece of pussy over here worth fighting for? Fuck no.
So Wiley and Mitch head to the school the next day, and Wiley's pretty worried about what's going to happen to them. Mitch plays it off. He's just like, we'll be fine. But nope, the pranks begin. Chairs break that they sit in. Wiley gets glued to his own locker. They steal Mitch's clothes while he's showering.
Who showers alone at school?
Yeah. Nobody. That's the problem. Nobody showers alone at school. The twins.
If you shower alone at
school, then Freddy Krueger comes and rapes you.
Yeah.
Or it.
One of their pranks is while Wiley is driving, they actually just try to run him off the road and cause a car accident.
Yeah. And the timing is just so fucking horrible for him. The driving instructor just happens to look down. He drops his pen at the exact moment. They ruin his life.
So, he doesn't say, look at those crazy people that try to run me off the road. He's like, yo, it's pretty sweet, right?
Yeah.
What I want to know is what school changed their toilet paper to the stalls really up high.
I've never seen that
before.
So when you shit, you got to stand up because your butt cheeks close when you stand. That's the reason. You follow what I'm saying?
It's a horrible way to do it. Yeah.
Have you ever been out of toilet paper so you've actually had to stand up and then go into the shower and clean the shit out of your... Have you ever had to do that?
Yeah, 100%. Usually
there's a run on toilet paper right now, so...
I just...
Yes, now would be the only time in the whole history of the world that it would be justified.
Well, I'll tell a funny story about a gentleman that Mr. Carroll and I played rugby with years ago. We had a friend named China, and he was from... China. And
he's from Hong Kong.
Yeah, from Hong Kong. And we were at his house one day, and somebody went in there to his bathroom to go. He's like, I need to go use the bathroom. As soon as they walk in, they're like, China, you don't have any toilet paper. What the hell? He was just like, oh, yeah, I haven't had toilet paper for like 3 months. I was like, what the fuck have you been doing? He's like, I take a fucking shower every time I shit. Every single time. So for 3 months, this kid was just he's like, oh, I got to shit again. Guess it's time to fucking hop in the shower, wash my asshole.
When he had diarrhea, he showered 9 times.
You didn't even have the seashells?
No seashells. I do. One of the pranks, though, that obviously they wet down all of the toilet paper, and I did pull the audio of the shitty butt sound, which is, I don't know why, I love just how this sounds. It literally sounds like a guy walking through a boggy marsh, just like, just give a little listen to this.
That's him walking down the hall. Is that correct?
Yes. That's the shitty
butt
sound.
A couple things about that. If somebody wet toilet paper, that wouldn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I'd still use it.
I would just use the wet toilet paper. It'd probably be better, right?
Yeah, I'd probably get a much cleaner asshole.
I don't give a shit if the toilet's clogged. That's somebody else's fucking problem. I just grab a handful of wet toilet paper. And one more thing. You know he's reading a fucking surfing magazine.
Of course.
I mean, you're such a fucking fool.
I think this highlights the problem with, like, the hockey team. Like, if they spent a fraction of the time that they did planning and executing these pranks on practicing hockey, they would have beaten the Preps every single year.
Yeah, it's true. It's damn true. Also, what about this? Like, first of all, I've never had to do the shitty ass walk in a public place because I would just sacrifice my own underpants if I needed
to. Of course,
to, right? Like,
yes.
You'd wipe with that. You'd do anything but take a quarter mile walk to another bathroom so you could find some toilet paper. It doesn't make sense. He's not thinking outside of the box.
I like how you assume that he walked to another bathroom. I just assumed he was fuck it. This
I just sat down.
You're just like, this is how I live now.
he just took the L.
So he runs into Wiley in the hallway, and they talk about the bad days that they're having currently.
You're touchy.
I'm being stalked by trained psychopaths. Yes, I'm touchy.
Well, at least they didn't put itching powder in your jock strap, did they? I mean, my jock itch has jock itch. I hope the girls don't think I had a chubby all day.
That's not exactly the mental picture I need to make my day better.
Well, it can't last forever, right?
Neither can I, man. I need traffic, smog, heat waves, a decent burrito, for God's sake. I need the ocean. I can't take it anymore, man.
Easy, you're losing it.
E.T. didn't want to go home.
Worst monologue in any
I gotta get out of here. I want to go to the market. I gotta get some pigs.
He said E.T. didn't want to go home worse than I did.
God, Jeremy is so right. He's literally being tortured.
Yeah.
By these people in the school, and he's upset because he can't get a fucking decent burrito. That's what his fucking problem is.
Hey, man, there's never been a movie that's outlined first world problems harder than this film.
He misses traffic and smog. He doesn't care that these psychopaths are trying to kill him.
So Mitch heads home exhausted and plops down when his sweet auntie sees him and freaks out a little bit.
Mitchell! Louis, come quick, it's Mitchell! Oh, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, 911, don't let it be an overdose, don't let it be an overdose!
And I read.
Oh,
I was just resting.
Oh, we thought you were on drugs.
No, I'm just tired.
Are you coming down
with
something?
Go get me a Pepsi.
I had a rough day.
Oh, I nearly forgot. We got a card from your folks. Your dad came down with poison oak. And you got a big package. I put it on your bed. What is it?
Something I should have never forgotten.
Oh, yeah. His fucking rollerblades. The thing that actually makes him cool in Cincinnati.
Now, I assume this is where we're going to take a break and go into episode two, but I do want to mention that his aunt physically slaps him in the face.
Yes.
In that last scene, that's correct. And he's fine with it. He doesn't blink. That's a normal thing that happens.
Yes, yes.
Institution!
Now, it's worth noting during this whole scene that he hits the streets. He sees Nikki. He falls over in front of her for being such a skating guru, right? But it starts right after this, this skating montage, which is immediately, it screams Rocky, okay?
Oh, yeah.
This entire
screams
part,
it, yeah.
Right? It's just, he's going down and he gets kids on BMXs start to follow him. The skateboarder kids are following through and he's like ripping through the town, jumping off walls and stuff. And then just magically finds his way to the half pipe in town. Because he's just exploring, right? He's just exploring. He's like, oh, look at this half pipe I came across. He immediately starts fucking shredding that and is getting like wicked air and shit like that. And the local kids are great. And instead of running up like the giant steps like in Rocky,
yes,
he fucking
yes.
skates down them. But doesn't even do it. He's just jumping from like platform to platform. And they're like,
and they're all
yeah!
cheering him on. Yeah.
We've never even thought of trying something like this, even though we're the local skater scene, right?
He's like between all the eight-year-olds now.
He's the hero of all the eight-year-olds, you said?
Yeah.
Nice.
So you say Rocky scene. I instantly thought of Forrest Gump.
I was thinking more of Castaway, although those were skates and not rollerblades.
Well, Joe, my plan is I'm just going to keep rolling. This is all one big episode.
I might
break it up into two later in post, but we'll just keep rolling through.
Let's go.
When it boots us out of here, we'll start a new fucking room, but we'll do what we got to do.
What would have totally saved this film?
What would have saved this?
5 minutes of him in like the biggest bong in the world.
Yes, the lack of weed.
That's a subtext.
Yeah, like if he was a stoner in this movie, which is implied but never shown, right? Then his character would make so much more sense to me, right? But
and the ending would have ended him with the biggest bong and the biggest burrito ever.
Yeah, the fact that he's also straight edge on top of all this just makes him so much insufferable, right? Like it's fucking horrible.
No alcohol, no weed, no. No, nothing.
Yeah.
Just surfing and rollerblading.
No fighting.
Jesus. Yeah, by the way, there is not one fight in this entire... There's not one fight. They do no drugs. They do no alcohol. All they do is rollerblade.
Yes, yeah. That's it.
Picture of high school in middle of nowhere, fucking Ohio.
So,
I was thinking maybe the word smog is like a code word for weed.
A traffic in smog.
So he meets up with Nikki and they go to basically the, I guess it's like a greenhouse that's just like Cincinnati's local greenhouse there.
No, Toad said the name of it. What is it?
It's like an arboretum.
Is it arboretum? Is that what it is? I think you're confusing that with the bean burrito he misses so much.
Well, what I want to say here is like as soon as his skates come in, winter is over.
Yeah.
Like there is snow on the ground. They are storming. And as soon as his skates come in, like it's spring. Like they're good. There's no snow.
So as they're going down and he takes off his skates to go inside, but as he's been pressing Nikki with all of his plant knowledge because nothing gets a fucking girl wetter than when you can.
By the way,
you spot
my father,
a tiger lily.
My father has sold insurance for the last 50 something years.
That makes chicks hot.
I don't know shit about insurance. I don't know anything about it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I know nothing.
He's saying my parents do this, I know all these things, right?
My stepmother is a nurse. I don't know all the bones in the body. I don't know all the organs.
Cables anyway.
Yeah, it reminds me of like that part from Groundhog's Day where he's learning to play piano and it's like his 10th lesson, but because he's meeting the lady every single day, she's like, yeah. Are you sure this is your first lesson? He's like, yes, but my father was a piano mover. Like,
if I was listening to this show when you said Groundhog's Day, I would have written that down.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's it.
By the way, when I met Tobolowsky from Groundhog Day, I asked for the hugging picture. So,
oh, nice.
Comfortable hug.
So you hug the guy who plays fucking
Ned Ryerson.
Ned Ryerson. There we go.
Yeah, yeah. Needlehead Ned.
Needlehead Ned. So now as he's naming off all these plants at Nikki's request, he sees this little dark tunnel and something clicks in his brain. He's like, I gotta throw the fucking blades on. So he starts skating. He starts skating through there to impress Nikki. She's like, oh my God, you are nuts, right? And there's just this sexy skate music that plays. Like,
that 90s R&B, man.
Yeah. And it's important to note, he's doing no tricks in here. He's just literally doing like the equivalent of what a single skate, like what you would do at the roller rink. Like, he's not doing any tricks. There's all this stuff to like grind on and do different tricks. He's doing none of that, okay? And she's like, you're too fucking crazy for me. You're a wild spirit. You're hard.
Hey, do you remember earlier in this episode when I mentioned My Love Is Good Enough by Jeremy Jordan and you said you wouldn't play it?
I lied, I guess.
You just played it, yes.
Hey, nice. So as he's heading down the steps, I'm sorry, let me backtrack here. There he goes. Now, but as they leave, they agree to go on a date Friday night, but he gives her the caveat that you got to find a date for Wiley. Okay, just him, he the arrogance of him is like, oh, you're a hot chick, I'm really into you, you got to find, if you want to be with me though, because I'm clearly I'm out of your league, you need to go find a fucking piece of trash to go date my fucking trash cousin tonight. So
well, by looks alone, he is out of her league, right? I mean, she's like a 6 or a 7. Yeah. Love interest in
them. Oh, she's a Cincinnati 11, though. I mean,
do we ever see her in school? Like, we see him in class with Jack, so we can think that they're in the same grade. Like, is it possible that she's in like middle school or something and just showing up to her games?
No, remember, we do see her. She gets mad at him because he doesn't. There's nothing in the world worth fighting for.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
That bad. Comes up a little bit later. Yeah, we see her.
I know I'm like in 12th grade, but I'm only 20.
Yes.
I'm only 35. My name's Jack.
So Mitch tells him, Mitch goes home and then tells Wiley that he's got a date for him, and Wiley's not fucking grateful for this. He clearly has never gotten pussy or even close to it. He's lied about it in the past, but he doesn't even seem excited that he got him a date at all. Which
he's also brushing his teeth in a manner that just, like I said, every time he's on the screen, like, who the fuck would do that? And why is it all over your face? And also, if somebody walks in, if someone's on it, you wipe your face off, you spit, you rinse, and then you have a conversation with somebody. Nobody would do this.
Yeah.
Also, you just mentioned Nikki in middle school. Nikki's actually, she's 21 in this movie.
Oh, okay.
She actually can drink. She's 4 years older than Mitchell.
Ooh, fuck yeah. Good for him. So,
what's that hair? That Maharishi bullshit.
Can I mention a really quick story about the most uncomfortable friend that I ever had?
Yes.
Sure.
By all means.
He was at least 21, 22 years old, and apparently a big ass dork. And of course, told me about different exploits with women that he had. And of course, he went to one of these like seminars where they give you like bullshit, like, oh, your life can be all bullshit and everything. And then he comes and he's like, dude, all those stories I told you about women, I was lying. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Can I tell you a story about the most uncomfortable friend I have? He just told a story about the most uncomfortable friend he has.
Well, thanks for calling me a friend.
Holy shit. That's got to be the fucking bit of the night right there. Oh, boy. So, he then hops on his surfboard while Wiley's taking a shower, and this is the scene where the only scene where he actually uses the surfboard at all while he's in Cincinnati.
South Bay, South Africa, no one around,
No cameras, no sponsors, just the goose and the waves.
And power.
Which, by the way, that's the first time anybody's he's ever referred to as the goose. I mean, when he refers to himself, he's the goose.
Point break right, spitting like a washing machine, an awesome ride. Even more awesome because he's in Cincinnati. Yes, Cincinnati, never been done before.
So he puts it on his bed and then just pretends to surf, okay? And it's just, it's one of the most cringy moments is just watching him pretend to surf and then imagining that he's fucking hitting
nowhere
waves.
Nowhere near one of the most cringy moments in this movie. It's way down. It's way down there.
Is this like that screenwriting like rule? Like if you introduce a gun in the first act, you need to use it by the third. Like we introduce a surfboard in the first act, we need to use it at some point.
Got to happen. It's got to be used. So he actually ends up wiping out because his imagination is so powerful that he believes that on this bed, whoa, this wave was too big, man, and he fucking falls off. Which I have children who have vivid imaginations. They don't have an imagination this powerful where they'll wipe themselves out. You understand?
Well, that's for the CGI of the talking shark in the dream.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think there goes the subtext of he's fucking stoned.
Yeah. So Wiley hops out of the shower and they have an impromptu fashion show with Wiley, which
my love, too sexy
we get to hear
love,
right said Fred's I'm too sexy. Which he comes out in all types of different outfits. One of them is a legit outfit that I have and I currently wear. Which is
it the right set Fred outfit?
No, it's the Canadian tuxedo, the matching denim pants with the jacket like that, and a black cowboy hat. I own all three of those and have worn them in tandem before. So.
And Mitchell is cracking up like this is the funniest thing. Yeah. I'd literally be like, dude, quit being a fucking asshole. Put on a pair of jeans. Put on a button up and let's fucking go. Why are you dressed? Why is your hair like that? Yeah. Why are you doing that?
Why? Yeah, that's one thing I've never done. And all of the friends I've had in my life, I'm like, we're going out tonight. Fashion show real quick.
Embarrass yourself in front of me and then I'll make a comment like,
dance for me, monkey. Dance.
And he doesn't have one outfit that anybody would go. What is he fucking retarded? He doesn't know that none of those outfits are going to be attractive to a woman. He doesn't understand that. And Mitchell can't give him any advice at all.
Oh, that's,
he's going to sit there.
That's where you're wrong. That's where you're wrong.
Mitchell starts laughing like, obviously, he's fucking around. Okay, if you're doing that, that's funny. But then at the end, Seth Green gets frustrated. Like, oh, you don't like any of my outfits? No, Dick, I didn't know you were being serious.
Well, I mean, at one point he was wearing, like, a robe and slippers, like to go out on a date. Like obviously, I would think he's fucking around.
Oh,
you have mental problems.
You thought you were gonna wear a slipper? Is that slippers and a robe? You thought that a pipe?
Going to the fucking dock in a winter. In the winter, yeah. Like
high school bitches love Hugh Hefner.
Could at least tried the hazmat suit.
So, he does finally offer some sage advice to his sweet cousin in the form of Popeye.
You are not my cousin. Oh, come on, I give up. Popeye, now there was a great man. Do you know why? Never joined the hair club for men? And wrong. Because his motto was, I am what I am. Do you think Popeye ever worried about what he wore just so he could get olive oil in the sack? I should say not, dude. And do you know why? He was gay. Because he is.
Legitimate theory here.
Because he's gay.
One funny line in the whole movie.
Because
how about he's like, hey, he was what he was. Well, okay, but again, you were wearing a bathrobe. So is that who you are?
I'm bathrobe. God. I'm your bathrobe cousin now. So,
you know, Popeye had the chance of olive oil or like a Holocaust victim.
Yeah, so. I do like. I like that Jeremy is the only one who abides by this Popeye thing because he's currently wearing a bathrobe and a clown wig. So,
yes, he came out there to the fashion show. We didn't reject it.
So,
gotta be me.
He meets up with Gloria that night, and immediately when they head to the door, Gloria is not impressed by Wiley at all, even though she is also a weird ginger redhead as well. So just maybe it's one of those things that's like, oh, when you meet somebody who's too much like you, you can't be into them. Oh, and then Wiley goes to the car door, doesn't open the car door for him. Mitch has to do that. He just goes, what a fucking dick. So, but he's not giving him any pointers at the same time. He's just like, no, open the door for her. Like, act like a regular human being. Is this hard
for
you?
I thought
you
were going to say, hey, I thought you said I am what I am. I don't open doors. Yeah. Now you're going to fucking turn the theory on me? You're the one that gave me this advice. I've never opened a door in my life.
He pulls out the Popeye line later, though. Like, when he doesn't have to.
Yes. There's so many fucking horrible things that Wiley does in this film. It's ugh.
I don't think they wrote Seth Green a script. I think this was Seth Green at this time. Like, he was just like, whatever. This is who I am.
Bad instincts.
So Nikki and Mitch end up near the docks, and he poses her a hypothetical question to Nikki. If you could have dinner with anybody, who would it be? He goes, Gandhi and you. It's just, what a fucking... the level of douchiness you have to do. He's like, oh, I'm really into Gandhi, but also you in this particular moment. So, oh, God. So, while Mitch is basically getting her all fucking wet with his Gandhi talk, not going as well with Wiley. She's not really into him. They head to a local diner, and whilst eating, the prep guy from earlier, Blaine, shows up to sit down at the table, and we find out that he's had a past relationship with Nikki. Also something she never brought up before, okay? just he's like, oh, I'm in a love triangle with that dude right there. Not gonna bring that up. And during this, Wiley has to stand up for Gloria because Blaine tries to, like, basically force dance with her, and then Wiley gets shoved down to the ground. Luckily, though, as things are escalating, Jack and the rest of the regular school kids show up and scare off Nikki's ex-boyfriend, Blaine, wherein it is then revealed that Jack is Nikki's brother, okay?
What?
Yeah. Whoa. Lot of revelations in this scene. Lot of revelations. But now, the heat is coming from Jack onto Mitch because he doesn't want her dating some surfer badass who won't fight. He says he's never that he's going to drive Nikki home. She protests, and then Jack tries to start a fight with the Goose, and that's where we get to hear this little segment from Mitchell Goosen.
Is that right, man? You afraid? You afraid of me?
You think giving me a tough look, calling me a few names, putting sand in my locker is going to make me want to fight you? Well, you got another thing coming, man, because I could give two left testicles about you, your school, or your hockey game. I'm out of here in 3 months. 3 months. You think I'm going to waste my time on you or anyone else? You ain't worth it, brah. No one here is. No one.
Unfortunately, in this feat of anger, Nikki is standing right there. So he just basically said, fuck this town, I'm out of here in 3 months, and fuck this dumb bitch who's your sister.
By the way, if I were listening to the show and I heard you say feat of anger, I would have written that down as a correction. I believe you meant fit of anger, but it's
fit,
okay,
of anger. I'm eloquent as fuck, okay? I got this. So,
by the way, you've noticed before, whenever Mitchell replies to somebody, he's always throwing gasoline on the fire.
Yeah.
He has no idea how to defuse a situation. Everything that comes out of his mouth is exacerbating it further.
Yeah. Now, there is one highlight, though. As Gloria's leaving to leave with Jack and Nikki, she gives Wiley a little kiss on the cheek. So Wiley standing up and actually doing the right thing, which is like fighting for somebody that you actually care about, was the right move. So Wiley's actually slowly becoming the low-key hero in this film. But Wiley is frustrated with Mitchell, and they have it out outside of the diner.
Wait up, dude. Oh, just stop, all right? Just stop with the dude stuff, man. I thought surfers were supposed to be so tough. What'd you want me to do?
Why the way? Who's that? Yeah, who says this? Where is this thing coming from where surfers are tough? I don't know.
I thought surfers that knew everything about plants were tough.
I thought they only assaulted children.
thought you were President's Mess and Rob Banks.
Yeah, Nikki's in there. He's like, where's that man that I met that was willing to fucking disfigure a child?
Hey, I already told you I don't disfigure children anymore. That's the old me.
That was the warlord in me. So the next day, he tries to reconcile with Nikki at the school, and it's one of the few times we see her at school, but she ain't having it. She's giving him the cold shoulder. So next is another ripoff of Rocky Montage, the sad, struggling one where he's just walking near rivers and it's a real fucking bummer. He lays down and has a dream, and when he wakes up, he has to wake up his cousin Wiley to tell him about this insane dream he just had.
Wake up, man. Wake up. What? I have to tell you something. Come on, get up. Get up. Come on. What? I had this dream. There was this wave, and dude, it was not this digital fart wave. This was the big Mugamba. I mean, the one. You ain't getting another chance. Solar eclipse wave. And I was riding it, dude. I styling big time. Until I see this Mondo shark. Made Joss look like a guppy, man. And his name was Peppy.
Peppy.
Peppy. And he starts coming my way. But then he stops. And he looks me in the eye. And he says, in Spanish, no less, La ola es mía. I spoke Spanish in my dream, man. Because right away, I knew what he was saying. The wave is mine. The wave is mine. Then I woke up.
You woke me up to tell me a lousy dream.
Are you kidding? Everything we need to know is in our dreams, man. They're windows to enlightenment.
So he goes on to explain his own dream to somebody. Because generally when you have a weird dream, you always ask for somebody else. But no, he has the fucking knowledge in his head. He's like, I know how to interpret this exactly.
Can I say how much better the casting would have been if this actor was played by Stephen Baldwin?
Stephen Baldwin. This is, I think it's based on Stephen Baldwin's character.
The life of Stephen Baldwin. See, if I'm Wiley here and he wakes me up, I'm like, listen. Don't you fucking ever wake me up again with that stupid shit, all right? You can tell me it in the morning. Christ.
You know, this reminds me of an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where it's like, if I'm not in it or no one's having sex, I'm not interested in anybody else's dreams.
You know, I used to tell a joke. It's funny you say that. This was in my previous life where my ex-wife would be like, oh, my God, I had this weirdest dream. And that I was back in my old middle school class with my teacher, Mrs. Thompson, but I forgot my homework. She'd go on and on. And finally, I'd be like, hey, come on. She'd be like, what? You don't want to listen to what I have? I go, no, this didn't happen. Okay, I'm just hearing something imaginary. If you had an actual story that really happened, I would work hard to listen. But now you're telling me your pretend shit that you just slept on?
The real story about my wife, and this was probably right after we had had our second child. I'm dead asleep, okay? And I wake up to my wife fucking physically hitting me like hard in the chest, like a fucking slap. I'm like, what the fuck? Hey, what's happening? She's like, I just had a dream. I was like, okay. She's like, you were cheating on me in this dream. I was just like, so you fucking attacked me in my sleep about a dream you had about me cheating? Are you out of your fucking mind?
I had that exact same joke too. And I used to say, go back to sleep and dream we're in counseling.
His take on the dream is that Pepe the shark is actually Jack, and that and he comes to the conclusion that Wiley's like, well, you're gonna have to fight Jack. He's just like, you don't have to fight the shark. I was like, wait a minute. He's like, it's just you and the wave. You don't have to fight the shark. I'm like, okay. What? I don't know what that means at all.
If it tries to eat you? Okay.
Well, you're still not gonna fight a fucking shark. There's nothing.
Well, that's true. He's right about that.
Yeah, I feel like the creators of Jaws wouldn't agree with his take on Pepe.
The wave is Nikki, though, right? The wave is her.
Yeah.
The once-in-a-lifetime wave is this seven that he's found. Got it.
Yeah, and Jack is...
Cincinnati seven.
And Jack is the weird stepbrother porn that is flying within Nikki. So...
Can I just say that even in that Rocky-like montage that we saw before, he like goes to a river and like he looks out onto it and it superimposes over his face, but like he's still not picturing Nikki, he's just picturing the ocean.
Yes, like, eventually she's going to be like, look, enough, I need you to care about me. Everything's about these fucking waves.
I don't think the wave is Nikki. I think Nikki is the wave. Like, that's all he wants is just to go back to the ocean and be and drown.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure in Jaws 5 they can reprise his role and, like, have a ghost Quint, and he explains, like, dude, we don't have to fight the shark. We just have to get out of the boat. We don't have to fight the shark.
Yeah, that's actually one of the cut scenes from Jaws, is when Quint talks. He's like a shark's eyes. They're not like a man's eyes, like a doll's eyes. Also, they speak Spanish. It's very it's crazy.
His little Ed Gein buddy that didn't go out on his boat.
So next, Mitch throws on his rollerblades and heads over to the local unsanctioned rollerblade street hockey match that everybody in the town goes to, apparently. This Mad Max style fucking street hockey game. And Nikki's still giving him the cold shoulder. He says, we'll talk after the game. Gloria's there giving Wiley the eye. Things seems to be going well with them. Mitch hops in the game, and the preps are already roughing up Goose, and the team is not helping out Mitch at all. The team is actually just watching him get fucked up, but so he just takes the ball himself, fucking through feats of acrobatics, jumping over people, going between legs. He scores an unassisted goal by himself in a sport he's only played never. He's never technically played street hockey at all, ever.
He's been playing it for 30 seconds.
And he's fucking amazing. So,
I don't know, 30 seconds, two goals. I mean, one was against his own team, but still two goals. That plus minus is not getting beat by anybody. That's pro level.
That is
good. Even Snake could go pro.
So Blaine then goes and tackles Mitch, but Mitch won't fight him.
What's wrong with you? Why didn't you do anything? Why'd you just back down from those guys again? Mitchell.
So Mitchell then skates over after things cool down.
Mitchell!
And he comes up behind Blaine, and he pantses him in front of the entire group. Oh, man. And he goes from being the pariah to the town hero right there. The preps.
Was that really that funny?
No.
I mean, it's not like his cock came out. He had a fucking jock strap on.
Yeah, that's
was
it.
I'm like, what would have really happened is everybody else would have grabbed him and beat the fuck out of him. He's right to not want to fight this guy because, first of all, this guy is, 40 or whatever, Blaine. But also, everybody out there hates him, even his own teammates. He doesn't have a single ally.
Has there ever been a good character in a movie named Blaine? Is this just like...
I'd be Pretty in Pink.
Oh.
No, he's a bad guy. That's James Spader, right?
Blaine? His name is Blaine?
Blaine is the love interest?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Stand corrected.
Andrew McCarthy, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Once again, this is an 80s movie, like an 80s plot with a 90s aesthetic. Like, it's us versus the preps. It's like The Outsider. It's like Ski School. They're going to race down the hill at the end. Like, it's everything that we saw in every 80s movie. It just happens to take place in 1993.
I like that also Jack Black immediately comes up with a name for Blaine called Chocolate Stain Blaine. That was
Well, he's a very clever guy. That doesn't surprise me at all. The immediate nickname.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him in other movies.
So, but he didn't have a chocolate stain.
No, there was no chocolate stain.
He wasn't wearing underwear, if I'm not mistaken, right? He had shorts and a jock strap.
Who does that?
That's still a good bit. I respect the bit.
He's held back by cars that are parked.
So they try to follow after him, but the cars are in the way. They all have rollerblades, and he's leaving on rollerblades. Like, how are we going to get him?
Yeah, and he's jumping. Move these cars. I go, well, just go over him like the other guy did. Isn't that how he got away?
So,
how about how he stalled at Nikki to be like, hey, I'm still cool.
Yeah.
I promise you'll go out with me so I don't get my ass kicked.
Even Starsky and Hutch can make it over like a hood, you know?
Sliding over the hood.
So the hockey gang sans Jack go over to Wiley and Mitchell's house, and they have a little meeting. It's tense at first, but they immediately break and be like, dude, you're pretty fucking cool when you did that pants thing. Classic bit, and we fucking loved it.
Well, before that happens, the mom offers them grape Kool-Aid.
Yeah. The
racist.
It's like, oh, are you Wiley's college friend?
Snake just
friends?
Sits there wide-eyed. Like,
like, what? You think just because I'm Mexican that I drink grape? I mean, I do, but.
Yeah.
I want that. They ask him to go down Devil's Backbone. He's like, Seriously, can I get that Kool-Aid?
Can I get, hey, can I, I'll have that purple stuff. It's a Dave Chappelle bit. They just ripped right from here. Who knew? So,
people like poison it for him.
But they're there, more importantly, for a big question for Mitch.
Hey, man, check it out, man. This is the story. I've been challenged by the preps to a little skating race. We're going to settle this thing once and for all. You know, and I wanted, we thought maybe you'd, you know, want to come and skate in our team. Help us out. So what do you say?
Where's the race?
Devil's Backbone.
Oh, God.
We'd have a
Devil's
better chance
if you were with us.
What's Devil's Backbone?
Oh, yeah, it's only the most dangerous hill in the whole town. She's the last guy who even tried to walk down that hill. He just got so messed up. He forgot who he was. I saw him. Pins in his head and his, ugh.
Well, anyway, it's a bunch of hills, Mitchell. It's pretty dangerous stuff.
Then why do this?
Because we're tired of being put down. Treated like low-life trash.
Losers! Hey, man, we're somebody. This is our chance to prove it. But we can only do it as a team. So what do you say, man? You in or what?
And of course, Mitch is in. Mitch is ready to risk his life and limb for this.
Everybody compares this to Better Off Dead, and they say, Better Off Dead, that's a great movie. This movie sucks.
They're badasses. Mm-hmm. They're the best athletes in the school, right? Jack dating that hot chick, right? They're all, but somehow everybody thinks they're losers. Everybody's putting them down. Who? They fucking run the school.
Can we just ask the most pertinent question is, how does Mitchell not think that this is a trap? Like, based on everything that he knows about these people, like, they're gonna push him down a hill and they're gonna fucking kill him.
Yes, 100%.
Yes, you can't even walk down this hill.
Yeah,
by the way, just a rollerbladed.
Is Devil's Backbone a real place?
This is like Ben Hur of rollerblade movies.
Hey, is it a real place? Yeah. 10 miles straight downhill in Cincinnati? I'm pretty sure it's not a real place.
Would you race down this in a race for the ages?
I don't think San Francisco has a hill like the Devil's Backbone. Somehow it's in the middle of Ohio.
Oh, man. So we're immediately taken to the Devil's Backbone for some illegal rollerblade racing, which is, man, fucking badasses. Jack comes face to face with Mitch as they stare each other down, but so does Blaine. Blaine lays out the rules in Anchorman-style fashion.
Jack, rules are... There are no rules. Anything goes.
First team,
because I've seen refs and rules in other places in this movie.
Yeah. So,
hey,
first...
Blaine is dressed up like somebody who's like 40 that took up rollerblading that day.
Yes. That's how the preps dress. They have a full windbreaker.
By the way, why don't they just fight each other?
Yeah,
no. They're always rollerblading against each other. No one ever hits anyone.
So they start heading down.
American Pickers is when they go to the Devil's Backbone.
Yes, that's what is my favorite American Pickers episode, Jeremy.
Can I also say that the woman that like starts the race was in the speech class as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, she's not referenced any other time in the movie other than she doesn't wear tight jeans because she doesn't want to impress some man. But she's definitely like the 1990s version of like that 50s pinup girl that's like racing the cars.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, I'm here to fight the patriarchy, but also be eye candy at the fucking beginning of this race.
I know we're getting near the end, but Jeremy, can you explain that American Pickers reference to me?
Where they go to the Devil's Backbone in Ohio and they buy like a hood ornament.
So Devil's Backbone is a place.
I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about.
I'm sorry.
All right.
So they head down the mountain, and the rules are the first team with three over the finish line win, okay? Now, Snake takes an early lead. He's the fucking best skater, and he's fucking crushing it, followed by two of the prep guys that we've never met before that are clearly also better skaters than 90% of everybody else, right? Because they're right on Snake's tail. Augie, who's Jack Black, takes on the other Augie on their team and ends up taking that guy out when he's trying to take out Mitch, and then fucking Augie takes himself out by going crotch first into a tree. Blaine and Jack are pretty much battling all the way down the mountain. People are wiping out all over the course. There's fucking cars that are coming up that they have to avoid constantly. It's really a highlight. They really highlight the stopper aspect of the rollerblades, like the braking element of it, which, mm-hmm. Listen, as a guy who rollerbladed, that wasn't the fucking cool thing to have. You're like, oh, you use stoppers? What are you, fucking loser, right? Like,
well, they had to. They were going 90-degree angles downhill. How are they supposed to turn unless they slowed down?
You know, this is the most compelling skating, like, scene ever. Like, period.
Agreed. Agreed.
I don't know that there's been another skating scene, has there?
I don't know. The skating scene in Xanadu was pretty intense.
True.
So at one point, Mitch is lagging behind, but the twins basically use a slingshot maneuver where they link hands and they launch him forward so he can evade a car and jump completely over it. Everybody who's in the leader is not having the same kind of problems, but they're causing giant like car accidents and stuff that Mitch then has to use his sweet skills to like duck under semi trucks and shit like that to keep moving through.
He was the only one that actually made it out of that.
Yes,
under the semi truck. That's what separated him from the pack.
So
other favorite scene was all the rollerbladers that were trying to attack the semi and Road Warrior.
Yes. As we get near the end, Mitch is closing in on Jack and Blaine, and Snake and the other two preps are in the lead. The preps wipe out Snake as they're basically going through the Cincinnati Bengals stadium, because that's part of the race, apparently. They keep going through, and Mitch is realizing he's too far behind to catch up with the leaders. So he's at like the top of the stadium, and he can see Snake cross the line, followed by the other two preps. So he has to catch up with Blaine and Jack. So Mitch has a fucking brilliant idea that he jumps off the top of the stadium onto a very conveniently placed fucking truck that has, luckily, its lift gate open. He uses it like a giant slide and jumps off two stories.
That's a tow truck with a flatbed.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And then right now he's right on the heels of Blaine and Jack. When he comes up, Blaine goes to take out Jack and is successful in doing so and knocks him out of the race, it appears. And then Blaine turns his eyes to Mitch, but Mitchell just fucking ducks and sends him into the Cincinnati River. Mitch then collects himself to walk, to skate very slowly over to Jack, who's laying on the ground.
Come on, Jack. We got a race to win. Let's do it.
And he helps him up. The boy who is the brother of his girlfriend, and Mitchell and Jack cross the finish line, winning the race for the school.
And now when he fucks that guy's sister, he's not going to be mad.
Yeah, it's great. You know, the guys win. Wiley gets down there because he's been racing the other Wiley to the bottom. They actually take a car ride down to the bottom.
Bizarro Wiley.
Yeah.
The guy with the laugh, man.
Yeah.
Like, that they use over and over and over.
Wiley gets to awkwardly kiss Gloria, and Jack basically authorizes Mitch to bang his sister. He's like, fuck it, man. We run this race. You can fuck my sister now. It's cool.
With a three-way high five.
Yes. Yes. And that brings us to an end of fucking Airborne.
Can I tell you about my favorite deleted alternate ending to this?
Sure.
Yes.
It's the scene where he goes off the overpass and lands on the truck and completely double breaks his knees and is laying on the ground and just screams up to heaven, why, as he's bloody and dies,
and he can never surf again.
They just say that's the coolest thing he ever did and no one saw it,
like... You know, there, you're right, there is an actual alternate ending. You know, when Jack falls down and he's laying on the ground, for a minute Mitchell's deciding whether or not to go over and help him. There's like a little moment where he pauses. Meanwhile, they don't win the race. So some other douche just happens to get across the finish line. So he's like, huh, should I help this guy who's been torturing me through the whole movie? You know what? I'll do it so I can fuck his sister. Let's go.
It makes sense. Man. fucking Airborne. Now, I think the reason I watched this movie so many times is because I was one of the lucky kids that had HBO growing up as a child, and this was just a staple every day on HBO.
At like 7 in the morning on Saturday mornings, they play Airborne.
I think I've seen this movie 30 times.
Yeah,
up there. It's up there. Now, before we roll out of here, Toad, you said you wanted to talk about Snake's weird backstory. I know we didn't get a chance to address that earlier, but you'd like to see the Airborne universe, maybe a standalone Snake movie?
Like an expanded universe standalone Snake movie. I mean, let's look at let's look at the facts here. He never played hockey before, as far as what we know, in this very hockey player town, but he instantly becomes the best person. He definitely has a racially integrated gang, which you don't really see a lot. Like, he collects knives, he does tattoos, which I have no doubt that he's great at. Like, I want to see where he goes. And he doesn't spend time on school, so I want to see where he makes himself in the world. He may be a superhero.
That's fine, but how about a backstory on that guy who broke his nose? How about a whole movie on
Rosenblatt?
Rosenblatt.
I'm not convinced that Snake didn't break his nose.
Airborne 2, Rosenblatt's Revenge.
That's not Snake's work. He'd have something carved in his forehead.
That's right. He's a perfectionist, and he'd do it better.
Airborne 2, Snake's Revenge. Airborne 3, Rosenblatt from the dead.
In 3D.
Airborne 4, Jack is a fucking cuck, right?
Can I just say that Gloria later becomes like that angry waitress in Waiting, and I think that I think these two universes are connected.
You're saying this is all just a prequel for the movie Waiting? That's a take. That's a take that I was looking for.
There are a lot of big stars that this movie spawned. I don't know if it. I don't think this movie. I think this actually hurt their career. It was a bite off, I think.
A lot of big stars. None of them were stars in this movie.
Oh, man. And whatever happened to Mitchell Goosen after this? Who knows?
Hey, actually, I looked him up. Mm-hmm. He's a real estate salesman. He's a realtor. He also has a mugshot for Public Drunkenness.
Nice.
He was in five other things. It was like a soap opera.
He's finally cool.
Yeah, couple uncredited things. This was it. This is his opus.
What a great thing to be known for, man. What a great thing. Well, hey, Joe, Toad, thanks for being on the show today. Toad, I don't know if do you want to promote anything, or do you not want people to know that you're even here today?
Yeah, what would you have to promote?
I'm promoting myself, man. I'm not even promoting that, obviously, by my performance today. But
No, you were good.
Rocky Gorge Rugby, I guess, when rugby starts out in America again.
Yeah.
Everybody who listens to this will be driving to Salisbury to watch your rugby game.
Yeah, where I want to go is Columbia, Maryland.
So that's awesome. Joe, obviously you can find him on the Rob and Joe Show, and whenever the apocalypse is over, some Die Laughing Productions coming up, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't give you any dates because who knows if we'll be able to leave the house, but if you go to dielaughingproductions.com, you look at our schedule, and if you can go out, we could go out.
Now, should we let him in on a little secret that we've been working in their downtime? And by say we working, I mean just Joe and Rob, on writing a new murder mystery, possibly two new murder mysteries, if I'm correct. No?
Yeah, there's the one is written. It's a bachelor-themed murder mystery called The Final Rose. Rob wrote it. I did a couple edits, but it's really his baby. And then the other one we're doing is a soap opera one, which I'm extremely excited about because there's a lot of slapping and drinks being thrown in people's faces.
I got a call that said, hey, Eric, we want to throw about maybe 15 drinks in your face over the course of 90 minutes and probably slap you just as many times. So my whole role, I don't even think I speak. I only get water thrown on me and slapped for 90 minutes. So get ready for that. It's going to be fun.
Eric Woodward's fetish.
Yes. You can catch all things, though, Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. I link the Die Laughing production shows on there as well, so you can find all that shit. Links to the Quality Time podcast that you're listening to here on all our platforms can be found on that website. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month when it's not the apocalypse. That's hosted by Michael Quinlan and Kimberly Callahan down at the Auto Bar whenever that reopens. And if it's a thing, who knows? You could catch all that shit there. Jeremy still has a movie you can watch. That should be good. Check that shit out. The Killer Clown versus the Candyman. Jeremy, take us out.
Yeah, now to get back to some smog, man.